Thanks for listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, on several occasions, I have had the chance to speak with Kenny Solway. He is the last of a breed of outdoorsmen, or one of the last of the breed of outdoorsmen, called River Rats. And he spends time in classrooms now in the state, around the state, talking to young people about respect for the environment. And his adventures and his recent book is geared toward young people. It's called Muskrat for Supper. And great to have Kenny back to talk about his time in, as a river rat in the outdoors, talk about his book and its and who it's geared to, the young people it's geared to, and certainly to answer your questions as we move along today. Maybe you've read some of his other books. Do you think the river rat life is appealing? You try to be at least a part-time river rat yourself once in a while? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show. We also have a link there to his book. And Kenny Solway, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much, Larry. It's good to be back.
Yeah.
And I, before we begin here, I understand that you're thinking about calling it quits. Is that correct?
Oh, no. I'll never quit.
No?
No, not going to quit.
You're not going to retire?
No, no.
I heard that somewhere, and I was... disappointed.
No, I haven't made up my mind on that yet. No, it'll be a while.
That's great because this is you've always had one of the finest shows on public radio, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much.
And I appreciate you having me here today.
Well, it's great to talk with you. And I'm sure there are people saying, "What the heck's a river rat?" And,
well, yeah, that's a It's an honored title.
Yeah.
It's one that is given to me. You earn that title.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when John Madson wrote a book called Up on the River, a documentary book many years ago, and in it he described a river rat as somebody who was too crazy to freeze to death, too full of hot air to drown, and too darn ornery and independent to call anybody boss. And I'd have to say amen, brother. That's especially the last part. It's a sense of self-sufficiency, of independence.
And you hunt and trap and fish?
I did all those things, dug roots, collect herbs, do a little guiding. I guess you could say do a little everything except seek gainful employment. However, I did those things full-time for 28 years in a place called the Whitman Swamp. And the Whitman Swamp lies just south of Buffalo City, Wisconsin. It's one of the last big, seasonally flooded hardwood swamps along the upper Mississippi. The Tiffany Bottoms is another huge place, much the same. And that's up along the Chippewa River. So,
And that's not a small, that Whitman Swamp is not a small.
No, it's about 6,000 acres. And the state owns perhaps 5,000 of those acres. But where my shacks were, and two still are there, is public, or is private land, not public. So that's where I eked out a living. A place called Big Lake Shack, which sits on high ground, and next to the largest body of water in the Whitman Swamp called Big Lake. And in it is our four wooden bunks, a wood-burning stove, kerosene lamps for light, and I guess you'd call a primitive-type living. Mm. Yeah. The second place was called the Marsh Shack, and it's still there as well. And I inherited that, so to speak, from an old river rat who built it in 1952. And he hauled every piece of lumber out there, either by canoe or rowed it out there with a boat when the water was high. And that place sets on barrels and goes up and down with the water. And it also has 4 wooden bunks, a wood-burning stove, and kerosene lamps. And then I had a third place called the Tent Camp. And Larry, the Tent Camp was just what its name implies. Canvas stretched over peel poles and had a army cot in there and some 5-gallon pails with lids for cupboards and closets. And so those three shacks were where I
where
made
you live.
My living for those 28 years. Now, they are shacks, Larry. Often people would come to do an interview or something, and they'd say, well, we visited Kenny at his cabin. Some even went so far as to say cottage. Let me tell you, brother, they're shacks. Now, when I met my wife, Mary Kay, she defined the difference between a shack and a cabin. It's a woman. If a woman gets in there, they're going to make some order, you see. And so, but they have always remained shacks.
Well, and you had all those. You get started as a kid running.
Well, as I was born and raised about 4 miles in the hill country to the east of the Mississippi.
Yeah,
On a little farm, and of course we made seasonal trips to the river to hunt, fish, trap. But then I served a couple of years in the service, and after that, of course, before that, let's back up a bit, I was a poor student. I went to a little one-room country school sometimes.
Sometimes.
And often, of course, I would make paper airplanes out of the paper, chew the covers off the books. Didn't pay attention, looking out the windows, wishing I was outside. And when I got in the service, I went to New York City on a weekend pass and stood on the corner of 42nd Street and Times Square, perhaps the busiest place in the world. And this slick little country bumpkin who didn't have to do his homework, laughed at those who did, was in culture shock, to say the least. Eyes the size of silver dollars, mouth hanging open. I didn't know they could build buildings that tall. I didn't know there were that many people in the whole world, let alone one town. And that's when it dawned on me I had missed something special and precious called education. So my career opportunities, so to speak, were limited. So when I came back, I went into the Whitman Swamp and began to eke out a living as a river rat for 28 years or so.
And you taught, you were kind of self-taught, but you had other people helping you along the way.
Oh, yeah. I had relatives, uncles, and other old-timers, but the real old-time river rats were secretive. They didn't put their arm around you and say, here, boy, I'll show you where to catch the catfish. I'll show you where the mink are. You had to pick it up, bits and pieces of it at a time. So but then I also took up a most peculiar hobby called reading and playing catch-up. I don't mean the kind you put on your hamburgers. Catch-up is played this way. You put your finger on the book, and you read, you follow along, and you find a word you don't know, and then you take another book down called Webster's Dictionary, and you look that word up and learn to pronounce it, hopefully, and to spell it and use it in its correct context. So, still doing that today. I love to read. I think reading is just a great thing.
And you like to write, too.
Well, I do. But that came sort of by accident. Reggie McLeod publishes.
Reggie?
Yep. He publishes the Big River magazine. And he invited me to write an almanac for the, it was a newsletter back then. So I wrote a monthly almanac for Reggie. I think I did about 60 of those, so about 5 years worth. And I found out that I enjoyed
writing.
Yeah. So, and then J. Scott Bestel, who writes for Field and Stream, came along and suggested that we should write a book together, and we did. And since I've written several more books.
And you know, we're going to talk some more with Kenny Solway. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the IdeasNet. And also get your input here and calls and questions after this look at the news here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Have you ever wondered what it'd be like to live off the land, to hunt, fish, trap, maybe live in a shack with no electricity or indoor plumbing, completely in tune with nature and all the seasons? For some of us, that might sound like heaven on earth. For others, well, that's a little too rugged a life. Probably for most people, it's probably a little too rugged a life. Larry Mueller here. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. Kenny Solway has been calling the last river rat, and he's here to share his stories and lessons he's learned living close to nature. He's with us until 12:30 today, and happy to answer your questions when you call in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or go to my Facebook page, at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can leave a question or a comment there. And like the page while you're there. Click like. We'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. We'll be back with Kenny right after this look at the news. Great to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Kenny Solway, one of the last of the breed of outdoorsmen, the river rats. He has a new book out. It's called Muskrat for Supper, Exploring the Natural World with the Last River Rat. Kenny Solway, our guest. And it's great to have him with me in the studio. Thank you for listening in. Questions or comments for him, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And Kenny, before we go to the phones, talk a little bit about your book. Now, your book, this book, Muskrat for Supper, is aimed at a younger audience, but frankly, as I read it, I enjoyed it, and I'm certainly, you wouldn't call me young.
No, but I think everybody should retain a little bit of kid within themselves. Yes, it is geared toward a younger readership. However, I think, as you said, that anybody could find a certain amount of pleasure in the book. It answers a lot of questions that folks have asked me over the years. There's a touch of philosophy in the book. There's some how-to-do things, like the old possible bag, how to make a possible bag. I have mine here today, an old leather bag.
Yeah, it's a beautiful old bag. Well, great bag.
And you know, any woman who carries a purse carries a possible bag, because a possible bag contains anything you might possibly need for a certain circumstance. And another thing is how to make walking sticks.
Mm-hmm.
That's detailed in the book. And
And I enjoyed that very much. I had a Wisconsin Public Radio listener made me and my wife and daughter each a walking stick, and they're beautiful sticks. And they're great to have when you're out on a tramp.
Yes, a walking stick doesn't walk, but it enables you to walk better. It's a third leg going up a hill. You can use it for balance to cross a log. You can test the depth of the water or the mud. And then, of course, most of all, you can, when you get older, you can reach under something, pick it up, and look under it without stooping over. And then the most important part, you stop when you have a walking stick and you lean on it.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you become more observant, more introspective. And it's just good because you don't walk by so much. Otherwise, you keep walking, keep walking.
You walk by.
You go by a lot of things. When you got a walking stick, you don't. So.
Well, we have so many people who want to visit with you. Lois in Janesville, we better go and take some calls here. Lois, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hello. This is such a happy coincidence that Kenny is on your program just at the time that I am reading this delightful book by a copyright 1969 by a man named John Kulish, who was a hunter-trapper in Vermont. And he also got started and made his decision after he left the Navy way back when. And he has so many delightful stories, things that he knows for sure that he is sharing. And I am just enjoying both the book and the program so much. I'd like to give one little quote from his book. He says, "For 30 years, he and his family lived close to the bone, so close the marrow was often in jeopardy."
Yeah, that's a good... Thank you so much, Lois, for calling. And Kenny, that might have described you, too, at some points.
Lois, you that quote really hit home to me. That's one of the reasons that there are fewer and fewer full-time river rats. You simply cannot garner enough income to sustain what I would call is a modern lifestyle. Not only that, but you sometimes have to have the tenacity of a bulldog, the stubbornness of a mule, and at times the disposition of a Tasmanian devil to survive being a river rat. It's very... very telling on you physically. You roast in the summer. You freeze in the winter. There's a horde of bugs after you. There's falling through the ice. You can strike a ground nesting bees, yellow jackets. You can be cut bad by using tools, knives, axes, ice chisels, and there's nobody there that's going to help you out if you're by yourself.
Yeah.
So I certainly appreciate that quote, Lois.
Here's another one, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Beavers possess a group fidelity as compelling as that of the ant, the bee, or the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Once again, very well put. And the beaver also, Lois, is one of the few critters that can alter its own environment on purpose.
Yeah.
Like we can.
Yeah.
They say, hey, there's a stand of willows up the creek on Farmer Jones' land, and we'll just build a dam and as high as we need to, and we can swim on up there, cut those willows and float them down to our lodge, and life will be good.
Thank you, Lois.
Yeah, bye.
Bye. Dwayne in Hayward, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Having grown up hunting, fishing, trapping, and dreaming of doing the same thing, reality soon set in and found that hunting, trapping, and fishing full-time is very low pay, long hours, and hard work.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And I'm wondering what years, or what year did he end being a full-time river rat?
Mm-hmm. Well, what made it end?
Or what year?
Or what year it began?
Both.
Yeah, what year
both. Okay.
It began and ended?
I guess it began probably in about 1965, and so 28 years onto that would be...
93?
Yeah, about 93
or 94,
yeah.
Tough period with falling fur prices and gasoline prices rising and everything else you need to make a success of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. There you go, Duane. Thank you for calling. And Jan in Winona, Minnesota. Hi.
Yes, hi there. Actually, I'm calling from Wisconsin, but I can relate to Kenny because my father was an avid duck hunter, and I went duck hunting with him out of Buffalo City, went through all the backwaters, the slough going out to Whitland Dam area. And in fact, there are people in Winona that know Kenny personally. And one is Stan Hammer. And, my father's name was Sonny Ehlers. But, my dad and my grandfather go back to Armistice Day. And they're just very interesting stories, how they barely made it out, how they had to push across the ice. There are just so many beautiful memories I have of duck hunting with my father in Buffalo County.
Oh.
Jan, it's good to hear from you.
Oh,
I knew Sonny Ehlers very well.
Oh, I could miss the eye. Thank you.
Yes. Didn't he work for Sunbeam Bread? Or?
Exactly, my dad, yes. He was good old Sunbeam Bakery.
Yep.
Yes. Yep.
Sonny was a real, real old-time duck hunter.
I know. My dad would have been 90 years old, but he passed away 2 years ago.
Yes.
And
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. But many duck hunting tips with my dad and, you know, how the waters have changed. But going back on those smooths, how, like, Rudy Ellings had his big boathouse parked on one corner. I just many times with my dad in the duck swamp.
You bet.
Just wonderful, wonderful memories.
Yes, and in the end, Jan, that's what we have.
Yeah.
Our memories. And we make those memories by... having outdoor adventures, and not only reading about them, but living them as well.
And yes,
you were fortunate to have done that.
You know, it's I think it was Oscar Levant said, "Happiness is not what you experience; it's something you remember."
Something you very well put.
Yeah.
Something you do remember.
Oh, most definitely. So, like, I can just relate to when you started talking in the very beginning, I thought, oh my gosh, Whitman Dam, how rough it can get in just a second in a storm. All those back, it's just so beautiful. But our river has changed an awful lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it has. Yep.
But it's still beautiful.
It's still beautiful.
Yeah. Jan, thank you so much. I want to give some others a chance to join in. Joe in Wausau, turning to you next. Hi, Joe. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you. Yes, I just heard the previous person. Wouldn't that be funny how it was my sister what I liked about, too, was Kenny's two wonderful books that I read of yours, and I gave them to my son as loves to hunt and fish and everything like that. So I love reading about that, reading about the old times, and loved being in those bluffs in Winona. So wanted to thank you for those books.
Oh, you're very welcome, Joe, and thank you for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. And again, your book, this book, Muskrat for Supper, just out, and it's a book that's aimed at Well, it's aimed at a little younger audience, but frankly, as I read it, I really enjoyed it. I think anybody's going to enjoy reading it. It's published by Fulcrum Publishing, which they do a real nice job as well.
They sure do.
Appreciate that call, Joe. Is there, let's see, Pete in La Crosse. Let's go there. Hi, Pete. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Kenny. Kenny, the river certainly is changing with invasive species. Seems like a new one every decade. And on one of the boat cruises, you shared some wisdom with us that I'd like you to share with the wider audience, and that being something to the effect that there's always been invasive species on this river, and the river adapts. Can you expand on that for us?
Yes, I can, Pete. And was that on the Mississippi River backwater cruise?
It was, yes.
Okay. We find there are invasive species that come into our lives and into the natural world. However, the area that I write about is a driftless area. And the driftless area was never glaciated. So I reckon there are some real native species there. However, most of the rest of the state was, and the Midwest was glaciated. Therefore, I guess everything moved in there at one time or another. They invaded, so to speak. Now, invasive species like purple loosestrife, the zebra mussels, the garlic mustard, the buckthorn, and all that sort of thing, we do battle with those. However, we do not do battle with German brown trout. We do not do battle with Chinese pheasants. They seem to suit us. Now, we look at nature in terms of a human life span, which is perhaps 70 to 100 years or so. That's the blink of an eye in the natural world's timetable. So maybe what we should do is have a little more patience with these so-called invasive species. You know that nature takes care of a surplus in one way or another. Sometimes it ain't pretty in terms of animals, disease, starvation. And maybe if we give this a little time, why, it'll do the same with the invasive species. However, everybody has to do what they feel is right for the natural world, because we are all fellow travelers in that circle of life, and we walk it hand in hand, eye to eye, heart to heart, with all things in it. Some things suit us, some things don't. But I think we do need to have some tolerance and some patience, maybe, and see what happens here, too, as well.
Yeah, I mean, we forget that we are invasive species.
Yeah, we're invasive species, too.
Yeah, right.
Pete says, yeah, you're absolutely right about that. Pete, thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Kenny, you mentioned the circle of life, and you certainly talk about that in your book. And you talk just a little bit now about what it means to you. But you get that across in your book, and maybe talk a little more about that.
The circle of life, I sure will, Larry. The circle of life, of course, we are just beginning, perhaps over the last 30 years or so, to talk about ecosystems and how one thing relies upon the other. And that's what the circle of life is. All things in it are interconnected in some way, somehow, some fashion. And if one thing is gone, it'll be sorely missed by all the rest. And if we can learn to love and respect all things in that great circle of life, then we will begin to take better care of it, I believe. You can't take care of something if you don't love it and respect it. So I'm glad to see that it's finally being understood that it is indeed a circle. You draw a perfect circle, you cannot find the beginning nor the end of it. And that circle is what counts. Two great resources, natural resources, human resources. That's what we have. And as the natural resources go, so will the human resources. Pretty simple. Before we, it's getting down toward the end of the show, but I would like to say that before I forget about it, I'll be over at Rutabaga this evening.
Rutabaga canoes.
Oh. Rutabaga canoe paddle sport at 6 p.m. to do a book signing. And so if folks want to come over there, and if you're not interested in a book, just come over and palaver. Now, palaver is an old mountain man term that means flowery talk. And we can do some of that, too.
Well, I tell you, the folks, so that's at 6 o'clock, Rutabaga Canoe and Paddle Sports Shop in Madison. It's in a wonderful location, and the folks at Rutabaga have been very good to us and had them on the show many times to talk about canoes and kayaks, and so it's great to have you over there. Have you been there before?
I do canoe copia.
Ah, that's right.
Every year for one weekend. I show the film. I did a documentary film in 2005.
I remember that.
Day, and then the next day I do storytelling for Rutabaga. They're a great group.
Oh, they really are. And that's tonight, that's 6 o'clock tonight.
Tonight, yes.
Bill in Wakefield, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, hi. Thank you very much. I just want to say, Kenny, you're definitely the man. It's very interesting to hear. I'm kind of up in the Northwoods in upper Michigan and upper Wisconsin here, and a lot of people here kind of take the, the local nature and environment for granted, and they're kind of so wrapped into things of bigger, better, and they're so financially underwater that they don't realize it's the simple things in life that are what precious, and nature is one of them.
Absolutely, Bill. There's the acquiring things or stuff. That's all fine and dandy. But you know, we do not own our homes. We do not own our bank accounts. We do not own the metal cocoons we run up and down the highway in. And we certainly cannot own the land, cannot own the raindrops, the snowflakes, the moonbeams, the rays of sun that fall upon it, nor the wind that blows across it. When we purchase land, we purchase a privilege of being a good steward of that land, and then we turn it over to somebody else. But what we do own is our time, and as Jan mentioned earlier, our time is well spent if we spend it in the natural world and with those that care about the natural world, and that builds those memories.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you very much, Bill, for calling. I appreciate your call.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenny, boy, thank you so much. The time always flies when you're with me.
It's such a pleasure to be here, Larry, and I'm glad that you're not going to retire.
Nah, I'm going to hang around.
And leave us all in a lurch here.
I'll be seeing you tomorrow night in Eau Claire.
Yes.
Be talking to a group from Public Radio in Eau Claire and looking forward to that. And I wanted to mention again the title of your book is Muskrat for Supper, Exploring the Natural World with the Last River Rat. And it's get it any of the bookstores. Fulcrum Publishing is the publisher, and we have a link on my Facebook page to the book and to Fulcrum. So if you want to get a copy of that book, why you can go to our Facebook page and click there, and it'll take you right to where you can get a copy. And Kenny, thanks again.
Thank you, Larry.
Kenny Solway, one of the last breed of outdoorsmen, the river rats, spends his time in classrooms now around the state and does a world of good with our young people and with our older people, too, as a matter of fact. And his new book, Muskrat for Supper. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.